welcome to another episode of What You Doing Podcast. I come to you on the other side of computer mishap. I expected to have the episode out today. That's fine. I expected it to be out earlier today. But as it goes, sometimes life had other plans. You know, we're fine. The computer's fine. Such is life. Today I have the immense pleasure to be sitting down with Rowan Zioli from Rascal, talking about their work at Rascal, journalism at large, and politics. We had so much fun with this interview. I had to cut out so much of us just stopping to laugh. Now, I'm sorry to say, due to a technical issue, we don't have the video for this interview. I don't know what happened. OBS just stopped the recording at some point. So I'm going to double check if I, you know, have a hotkey or something that I don't know about. Sadly, no video. Sorry so much. No one is more upset than me, I promise you. I want to thank Rowan again for being such a good sport and spending so much time talking with me. It was amazing. As always, links to everything will be in the show notes. Links to the various Rascal articles we talk about. Links to various games. All of that stuff. All of Rowan's socials will be in there. We played a little fast and loose with this one, so on with the show.
How are things? How's your day?
You know, things are the way they are. Things certainly are, you know?
It feels like it's literally been a year since it was like, yeah, we'll do the podcast. It'll be really fun. I feel like literally a year has passed. Mm-hmm. And now we're like, it's like, you know, that thing we talked about doing forever ago? We should find, no, it's been like.
And here we are, yeah, no, haggard and weary and gray-haired. Yeah, what a nightmare. It's insane. Yeah, and then the, like, putting out the January 6th piece, and I interviewed the guys who made it yesterday, and so I'm working on that article today, and I'm just like, all right, yeah, I write about games.
I read that whole thing, and then I told my partner about it, and, like, we're walking the dog and she's walking ahead of me. And I was like, yeah, they just read a piece about a big war game for January 6th. And she stopped and turned around. And I was like, yeah.
It's exactly as intense as you would think it would be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's exactly the reaction you should have, which is like, what did you just say?
That's why I had to go to it. Cause I had to be like, what the fuck is this?
Right. What is this gonna, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I have to see it.
And it was everything and more than I thought it was going to be. And I interviewed the guys who did it, and they're like liberal. And so I was like, hey, have you guys considered like safety tools? Have you guys considered like the reality that maybe the people involved in this or the people who supported it might show up to the thing and like do violence? And they were like, no, of course not. Like, the people who show up will take care of each other. And I was like,
why would a white man show up anywhere and do violence? I don't understand. Where are you pulling this from?
I was like, hey guys, you know, the game that you just made shows why that might happen.
You know, those guys are pardoned, right? Like, you put the sticker on that they're out there right now.
They're there.
Some of them got killed by the cops and rearrested, but most of them,
I would say 95% of them.
Still a good lion's share. That's still enough. I think if I wrote a game, a war game specifically about the actions of, let's say, 20 guys, mm-hmm. and I knew that 15 of them were still out there running, I don't know if I'd be as excited to tell everybody about it.
Yeah, right?
Like, very specifically.
1,500?
Right, 1,500. And that's just 15 in the whole country. I'd be like, the chances are still.
The odds are a little high.
Oh. God bless the audacity of white men. Because sometimes, yeah, God's greatest soldiers.
Hey, listen, if you want to go on the front lines next, go for it.
Guess we wouldn't have bungee jumping. We wouldn't have motocross. We wouldn't have.
No one would skydive. Who the Antarctica? Fuck would think of that?
We wouldn't know what Antarctica was.
And you know what? Maybe we'd be better off for it.
Antarctica would be. Probably, statistically.
For sure, without a doubt.
I remember the article when they were like, yeah, COVID's hit Antarctica. And I was like, well, fuck. That's it.
Well, we're done here. All right. That's it.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up, everyone.
We've officially fucked it up enough. Everything after this.
We're out of here. So we're here for a podcast.
Yeah, literally, Rowan, I need you to know, this is literally how every one of these has started. It has just been bullshit, and then roughly 15, 20 minutes, we kind of both at a moment where it's like, all right, so podcast. All right.
Podcast.
So
like officially
started the podcast. And it's great. I appreciate that it has been consistent. I don't know if it's good. It's consistent.
You got to break the ice somehow, you know?
Yeah. And what better way to do that than saying how badly I want Mitch McConnell to be injured and how white men should stop. That's great. It's a great way to
start. Schadenfreude is so powerful.
That's great. I spent a lot of time yesterday talking about how spite is a great motivator. If that's what
it
you
really
need.
Is. If it what really you need is spite, through.
If you have to, if you need to shove it in someone's face to get it done, you know, let that be the tool you need.
It might not take you the whole way there, but it at least gets you through the beginning.
Oh yeah. Listen, that last 10%, that's a bitch sometimes. Maybe you just need someone to be like, yeah, fuck you, Jerry. Yeah, I'm gonna get it published. Done. What? If nothing else, show up Mitch McConnell.
Truly. Yeah, that's keeping me alive, being like, oh, I'm gonna outlive these fuckers. I'm gonna celebrate.
I've seen so many people say, like, I have to outlive Mitch McConnell. I can't. If not, I have to. And I think that's, you know, again, great motivator. If that's what you need.
Listen, I need the amount of ketamine that Elon Musk does to give him a heart attack so I can witness it.
At this point, I may as well see the whole thing through.
Right?
I've been through this much of it. I may as well, so that I can eventually be in whatever the post-apocalypse's version of Ken Burns is. You know?
Exactly. So I can be like,
yeah, I remember eBay, you know, when you would go on the internet and people and sell your goods. It's incredible. We have none of those things now.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for the collectives to bounce around artificial AI series to be like, ah, yes, this is our deity. I don't know what it is, but it's still here.
I'm just gonna say, because if I don't say it, we're gonna be here forever. Hi, everybody. Welcome to What You Doing Podcast. You already heard the intro, but I'm here with Rowan, who amazing. Listen, this is the one. I'm gonna keep it to a minimum. I don't know why they answered the email either, if I'm honest. I don't believe it. I got the email back and I was like, this has to be for somebody else. So I'm gonna fan for like one. That's it. We're gonna move past it. I did it. We're gonna move past it. You gotta do it. You gotta get it out of your system some way.
Yeah, you just gotta shake it out of there, you know?
Yeah. So we're here to talk about Rascal, you know, at large, celebrating 1 year, which is amazing.
Yeah,
crazy. Congratulations to everybody. You know, I feel like that first year is probably a big one.
Yeah, it was definitely, when we first started this, we were like, all right, if we can make it 6 months, we can figure out the next 6 months after that. And now we're here the next 6 months after that. And we're like, all right, well, I guess we'll figure out the next year. Okay.
We'll get bored.
All right. Yeah, it's been a wild year to try and start independent media for specifically a niche entertainment luxury hobby. Mm-hmm. It's been a real wild year to be alive. Yeah, it's fascinating. But it is really nice to see people finding value in independent journalism, and to see that really, especially as the legacy media institutions collapse completely, to be like, oh, there are people who have, myself included now, who have been laying the groundwork for what comes next, which is really nice.
Mm. It feels like during the first Trump administration when everyone went, man, Teen Vogue fucking rules.
Mm-hmm.
Has Teen Vogue been holding it down this whole time? And I guess the answer was yes.
Like, a little bit, yeah. Teen Vogue's political reporting for the last, like, 8 years, because, like, a lot of it during that first Trump administration was, like, freelancers and contractors, mostly, like, especially marginalized, and, like, black creators specifically who were writing and doing that reporting. And now they have two full-time staff members who are, like, in it and going through it. Mm. And they're just doing some really great stuff. Sorry, I'm looking over, I'm like, oh, there's a big spider on my window. Fuck, shit, Jesus Christ.
I was going to, when you finished talking, I was going to be like, you good? Because that was definitely the, like, oh, what is that?
Yeah. Big spider on my window. Listen, living in Brooklyn is not all it's cracked up to be. There's a dead animal in my vents right now that's been there for like a month because the landlord hasn't showed up to fix it. There's a lot going on.
That feels like every story I've ever heard about New York.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's fucked up that it's all everything with New York, and then you still have spiders. That's fucked up.
I know.
You think at the very least, literally no grass would mean that there were no insects, but no, life finds a way.
Well, no, because there's nowhere else for them to live, so they come inside where it's warm.
You just gotta drive them into the sea.
I got rat bones in my engines. I don't know what's happening. I wish that was a joke. Multiple times I have found rat bones in the engine of my car.
I've never found rat bones there was the time we found the dying possum in the bush, and that's not the same. That's close, it's not the same.
No, that's the circle of life.
Yeah, that's just, no, that's, it died under the bush as God intended. It didn't crawl into my muffler and desiccate. That's a very different chain of events. That was that rat was the Dark Souls of rats.
It was fighting through engine fans. It was like, all right, I'm gonna make it through, Mission Impossible style. God, okay, journalism.
Journalism. So 1 year rascal. I saw that y'all are doing a zine with some of your favorite pieces, with an incredible cover by Will Kirby. I honestly like scrolled past it and saw the cover and was like, go back up.
Mm-hmm.
What a slick idea that I am shocked people haven't done. I mean, I'm sure people have done it, but I haven't seen in like sort of hobby media, you know, like I've never seen Kotaku or Polygon or anyone be like, hey, we've made like a print version of some of the shit we like.
I think I've definitely seen some other people do this before, and especially like the print magazines of like Skeleton Code Machine has their print mag that just came out. But we especially, because we are entirely online, are like, oh fuck god, the internet's not gonna be around forever. We gotta make sure some of this shit makes it into print so that way it'll last. And yeah, it's been really cool. It's been really interesting. We're making it in partnership with Elliot Davis, who actually is about to be my roommate. So we were like, all right, if the conflict of interest is already going to be there, let's just like maximize it.
Let's lean into it. Let's lean into it.
Yeah, exactly. It helps that he's an incredible designer and publisher, so it justifies the fact that I love his games. But yeah, he's helping us publish this and get it to print. And I am so grateful for someone else to be taking care of those logistics, because Jesus Christ, I don't know anything about it.
Will Kirby
made an incredible cover.
Yeah, it absolutely... I thought for a second it was a sequel or something to like Eat the Reich. I was like, wait, we're doing this already? Hang on. It's the really quick 2025 update. but yeah, it's just such a fun idea at a time. Like you meant, we had 15 conversations after you said that, but you know, the growing independent media and independent journalism, I know this isn't the case. This is one of those times when I know that this is something I observed and isn't the case, but it feels like everybody all at once was like, I'm starting a website. This shit sucks. I'm doing my own thing, you know, cause it was y'all and it was Aftermath. That's when I became aware of like 404 and Defector, which I'm sure had you know, years. And so it was just like all at once, it was like, oh, every other place you've heard for news in your life fucking sucks. You should listen to these 3 to 5 like queer and BIPOC 20 to 35 year olds.
Yeah, and I think it definitely, like, in the grand scheme of things, kind of happened all at once, because, like, Defector's, like, 3-4 years old, and they're really the, like, the spearhead of this movement. And then Aftermath is, like, a little bit older than us by a couple months. There's, like, Hellgate out in New York. There's 51st, which is the DC independent one. It really just kind of took off because of how quickly the layoffs were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really over the course of the last like 2 or 3 years, media jobs just went away. Like tens of thousands every single year just got laid off from all these places. And like, no matter how good your work was, like, fucking Lynn Codega breaking the breaking the biggest stories in tabletop news maybe ever, and then IO9 being like, fuck off. And then like Dicebreaker collapsing, and like it just venture capitalists coming in being like, how can we extract as much money as possible without while also like, and we're seeing it very now with Elon Musk's takeover of the federal government and like the attacks on the press, how it's very much like, oh, this was intentional, actually. It was that these institutions have been really the first line of defense against holding people to account. Like, we are the canaries in the coal mine against these giant corporations. And if the giant corporations own us and then lay everyone off, there's no one to say anything about them.
I think it was somewhere in the first Trump administration, like the first or second year, where I made an intentional shift with the way that I was talking about the things he was doing and the things his administration were doing, where I was like, these people are not stupid. To think that they're stupid is to buy into their rhetoric. They want you to think that they're stupid. Actually, what they're, well, Trump might be stupid. they're actually just so incredibly calculated and so incredibly focused on the goal that they want to achieve that it's not that they didn't think through the consequences, it's that they don't care about the consequences because they want to achieve this goal. And like you said, like the destruction of media was the first thing. The geo media destruction, which, you know, hey, fun fact, that was a whole fucking thing. Y'all should look into the history of that. And even you mentioned Dicebreaker. Nobody talked about Dicebreaker collapsing near as much as I thought they were going to. Like, they got bought on Tuesday and they had a con on Friday and they were like, well, I guess we're not doing this. See ya, everybody. We'll just like, shut down the UK's biggest tabletop convention. Whatever. No biggie. Who cares?
Literally. Yeah. And it's I think it's also because there's the chronic fatigue of like, there's so much happening all at once. And like, specifically with tabletop media, that's not the biggest thing in the world to worry about right now, I guess. You know, it's like, oh, fuck, there's a genocide happening in Palestine. Oh, there's genocides happening here against like Native American people and trans people and black people. And like, there's deportations happening for every kind of immigrant, but specifically targeting Latin American immigrants. It's like, we are living in this era where they are intentionally trying, they being like, the powers that be, the government, the corporate oligarchy, trying to overwhelm us with all of these horrific things happening at the same time, so that way we can't feel any of them and think about any of them. And Mariam Kaba, who I really respect as a thinker and an activist, her biggest like advice about that is like, focus on one or two things that you can actually make a difference about. And then that'll help you actually move the needle. Because if everyone picks one or two things and really pushes it forward, then collectively we can start pushing back, as opposed to being spread out so thin across everything. Mm-hmm. And I decided to make journalism, and tabletop journalism specifically, my one or two things. Because I think joy is so important. I think it's, like, as cliche as it is at this point, like, joy is a radical act because fascists want you to be miserable. Games actively in themselves are way, yeah, actively they want us to be miserable. they like games bring us together, and specifically tabletop games, in a way of like being communal and trying to, you have to have organizing skills to get 5 or 6 friends around a table on a consistent basis, and you have to organize food, you have to organize like logistics, and you can take those same skills and bring them to other places. And just queer art and the existence of queer art and marginalized art at large is so important, because without that, we kind of get depersonalized, like in a sense of like our personhood goes away because of how integral that is. And so documenting that and supporting that from a grassroots perspective, from an independent perspective, felt like something I could achieve with the crossover of my skills and my interests. And I think that's something that everyone should try and figure out, where those things intersect to try and make the world less shitty.
Just even the little bit that you can. I think a lot of people get wrapped up in like, oh, I can't do this whole thing. It's like, okay, but like, what's the one thing you can do? Mm-hmm. You know, what's, you know, can you go like work at a soup kitchen a little bit? You can go mm-hmm. walk dogs at an animal shelter. Like you could do like small community focused things.
Literally get groceries for your elderly neighbor, like right. for your disabled neighbor.
Talking to your neighbors, being more connected to your neighbors is so important right now. Like people have such a, and I don't mean this like admonish me like people these days, but like just because of society, people have such a weird perspective of what community is right now. Like mm-hmm. I saw a big thread on Blue Sky where people were talking about like your community, like when you go grocery shopping, those are the people in your community. You might not like them. They might actively hate you for any number of reasons, but regardless, those are the people that you're in community with. And if you're a person, this is what I believe, at least if you're a person who's actively interested in like progressive values and improving the country, whatever, improving just life for people around you, you're going to make life better for those people. And that should be a thing you acknowledge and accept and like actively work towards.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I did an interview with Rara from The Heart is a Dungeon, who, in addition to being a great podcaster and actual player, has done a lot of mutual aid work, specifically mutual aid work with like conservatives and with people from the evangelical right, because that's what their background is. And discussing the fact that, like, regardless of political affiliation, and like, there is a lot to be said about the tolerance of intolerance and like how that propagates hate. If you are in your community and you are handing out food and diapers, the person who looks at you and goes, that's not a human being, sees that you are giving diapers to a mother that needs it for her child, goes, oh, actually, I need that too. And it starts to dissolve the like artificial barriers that the propaganda around the world, or around the country specifically, sets up to divide us. And while we have to like actively fight fascism, we also have to actively fight like ideological separation to humanize each other in a lot of ways. It's a really nuanced and difficult area to get into. And people with more privilege need to be the ones kind of risking themselves to do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting thought, and I highly recommend everyone go read that conversation on Rascal if you can, because it's just a beautiful conversation from a brilliant mind.
I'm going to spend a long time on show notes, I think, today. I'm going to spend a very long time. I don't want to be like, that's enough politics, but...
Let's go. Where are we going?
You mentioned your focus in journalism being focused around like queer expression, queer art, you know, queer identity. And I've spent the last 24 hours reading a lot of your posts from Rascal, and you know, doing Googling and things such as I do. And I think it's been very exciting. I have a very complicated relationship with Dungeons and Dragons explicitly. I think it's been very exciting in the last couple of years to see the explosion of queer art and identity and like just expression in mm-hmm. the space because of its popularity. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I have a very complicated relationship with that explicitly. Like, but I think it's so important that people are finding ways to be loud and gay on the internet, and if that means they're playing Dungeons and Dragons, all right.
And hey, yeah, listen, I'm also all for it. Like, I, as an artist, as a journalist, as a critic, have a lot of feelings about the monopoly that is Dungeons and Dragons. However, any avenue for self-expression, any avenue for community acceptance and visibility is great. It's awesome. Right. And I love that. Like, there is a massive overlap between queer people, like this generation of Dungeons and Dragons players, and queer people. Like, it is, the Venn diagram is really eclipsing itself a little bit. And yeah, I just think that's really beautiful. And I think that is an indication of not to get into politics again, but it's it's just an indication of like how the me. I know, I'm so sorry. It's almost like everything is politics.
Oh man.
Shit. But it's an indication of how like the larger narrative around queer acceptance is not what is happening on the ground. Like, I have a lot of fear. Like, I went down to visit my partner's family last week, and we had to drive to Maryland. And, like, having to really think about, like, what... Could we go to the bathroom in the rest stops? Because would people say something about seeing us in restrooms? And... No, they didn't. Like, of course they didn't, because most people don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Most people are really just, like, trying to live their lives. There was one guy who looked at us while he was peeing in the urinal, and I was like, hey, dude, you're actually the weird one? Like, why are you looking at me while you have your junk in your hands? Like, that's, like, you're, like, think about it for a second.
Explicitly, you're supposed to just look forward, so what are you doing right now?
Exactly, like, those are the etiquette. That's the rules. Yeah, it's a very small vocal minority that is actively hateful. And like the same goes for the Dungeons and Dragons communities. Like there's the fucking grognards, there's the there are good grognards. Let's not defame the grognard community. But there's a lot of old heads who really want the hobby to maintain itself for old straight white men because that is just a microcosm of the larger world and like that's just how they view the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the majority. And God, seeing actual play explode where all these queer people has just been beautiful to see over the last like 10 years.
It's always been really gay to pretend to be a little guy. So I'm shocked that it took this long, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the existence of Super Dylan has proven anything, it is that pretending to be a little guy is the gayest thing you can possibly do.
Gonna be crazy. Also moving in with Super Dylan.
That house is gonna be wild.
This house is gonna be great.
Is this for a streaming service? This feels like the setup. Like this feels like you're gonna be like, yeah, for 2B2.
We're going on Fubo.
Reality. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be Quibi, but it's gonna be me, Viditya. Aditya Valetti, Dylan, and Elliot Davis. And like, what a powerhouse of a TTRPG.
Is this true? Wait, is that?
That's not a bit. This is real.
All right. That's nutty. That's nut. I almost want it to be a reality show now because that would be ridiculous. Like, they have 12 days to write a best-selling actual play show. Like,
and it'll happen. And that's the thing.
It would. You'll trip and it'll happen. You'll make a joke one day. And they'll be out there on the table like, okay, but what if we got some lights? So
yeah, we just got a camera set up. Like, how do we feel? Jesus. All right, roll for breakfast.
my favorite new itch game, roll for breakfast. We make a joke. 3 days, that'll be a thing.
Roll for breakfast, go for it.
Please email me. Please email me and let me know if you make games, if you make roll for breakfast. I had a point. But we said a lot of words between when I started thinking. That is the AD and the ADHD experience, not the AD&D experience.
The AD&D experience is not queer at all. Honestly, it's actually very actively not queer if you look at the rules.
God, that's the straightest one. If you had a gun to my head, AD&D, that's the straight one.
Yeah, for sure. Try to get back on the rails.
Yeah, trying so hard to be any kind of professional and not just scream about queer games all day. And you know what? Maybe I should just lean into it.
Yeah, you know, professionalism is a hoax. You can be professional but not take yourself seriously, and I think that's an important distinction.
I think that's a good thing to keep in mind. It's silly to say a question like what's the goal for Rascal? Because I think the goal for Rascal is like write about cool shit, make enough money to keep it going.
Yeah.
What is kind of your personal goal for like choosing the things that you write about, choosing the topics that you cover? Like we talked about the January 6th war game. I think anybody that considered themselves any amount of journalist should have responded to that email. If for nothing else than like, I'm going to tell this story for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But so what is your like, what is your driving ethos? With like, here's the stuff I want to cover. And then connected to that also, I know it's, you know, it's the three of you and, you know, you're bringing on some freelancers and part-timers and there's a lot of moving and shaking right now. Is there a like separation of focuses? Is there like, well, this is about the, this seems like a white guy thing. We'll have Chase do this. Is there, you know?
Well, the podcast is Chase's thing because that is a white guy thing for sure.
That's fair. Without a doubt. That's fair. Listen, I don't identify as a guy, but enough that I'll start a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
enough. You could not stop me from starting a podcast.
You can't. You can't hold me back. So there are, right now, there's four full-time rascals. Lynn is still off living their vampire dream out in Hollywood right now. So it's me, Chase, Caitlin Ellis, and Thomas Manuel. We each have our own, like, beats and interests. Caitlin obviously has her war game beat. I have my actual play beat that I have a little bit diverted from because there's the world going on and I don't have 20 hours to watch actual play every week. Thomas he's really into covering the international scene, which I also care about. He's also into like history and documenting history of tabletop games. And Chase does solo games, does a lot of business reporting, and covers like the business side of the industry. So we each have our different like avenues and they overlap significantly. But when it comes to what I focus on specifically, is kind of like the reason why we started talking about politics for the first 20 minutes of this is because I think the most interesting part about games and entertainment and culture at large is the way in which those niche communities reflect the larger world. The way that these niche isolated communities intersect and interact with systemic oppression, or the ways that they intersect with progressive thought and like taking action on that progressive thought. Actionizing. I'm a writer, guys.
Yeah,
listen.
No, you can make up a word. It's fine.
That's what Shakespeare did.
Yeah. Listen, someone has to make it up or else it's not a word. Every word's made up. Go tell your English teacher.
And honestly, that's true. If you talk to a linguist, they'll be like, fuck yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Listen, one day that word didn't exist. The next day that word existed. It happened for all of them.
And here we are.
The
thing about it, that's what I always bring to the things that I write, though. Like, I do a lot of labor reporting. I do a lot of climate reporting. Like, I am like I said before, I'm a quote-unquote games journalist. But I cover climate. Like, I covered the Hurricane Helene impacts. I am a culture and tech reporter because I'm looking into like TikTok and how TikTok TTRPGs impact everything. I went to the fucking January 6th war game and I talked about politics and how like that does everything. Like, it's, you cannot look at something in a vacuum. Everything exists within the context of something else. And the stuff that I really care about covering does so intentionally. Because it's really easy to say, like, make a 5e adventure that doesn't really do anything, and, like, that's escapist, and that's important, and it adds to the ecosystem and industry in a lot of ways. But it doesn't need my time and attention to, like, bring it in front of a bunch of people. When I was at Polygon, it was also interesting because that is a different responsibility. I have some limitations on the things I'm allowed to write about, but I still wrote about, like, tariffs. And I wrote about, like, the migration to Blue Sky because of Elon Musk's X takeover. I wrote about a lot of indie games because the platform of Polygon is stronger to get indie games in front of more people and get people talking about indie games in that way. I'm very cognizant of the responsibility I have as a journalist in this specific moment, both to uplift people and the work that they're doing, and also hold them critically, like the World of Game Design investigation that I did, where I was like, all right, I'm an investigative reporter now, like, we're diving deep into this, and I'm gonna really figure out what's happening here with this exploitation and this free Mormon labor and these weird handshake deals, like, investigating that for 2 months, because seeing how this type of like tech bro mindset exploitation exists from the top level of like SpaceX and Twitter all the way down to indie distributors. It's nothing is separate from anything else, and it's just important for me specifically to remember that and bring that to our audience.
You mentioned uplifting and yet being critical, and I don't think I've stopped thinking about Charlie's article. And Chase's, I don't want to say Chase's response to it. I think response would be miscategorizing his intent with doing it. But I think it's a very difficult line to walk, I think. I think a lot of people have, a lot of people have appreciated Rascal's kind of the soapbox section where it's just like, just put your press release. It's there. It can exist. It's a community forum thing. And it doesn't have to be, I think one, a fantastic thing that it does is it allows indie creators to legitimize their work in a way they weren't able to before. You already have, or will very soon be speaking my friend Star for Star's Character.Stories. Yes. And she was very excited. She, you know, put the press release and all of that. And that's just not a thing that existed really before.
Yeah.
And two, that means you don't have to have like some weird freelance writer. Well, weird, that rude. Damn me.
Listen, we all have internalized biases. We all figure it out and we learn it as we go.
You don't have to pay someone nothing to retype press releases and, you know, under the guise of journalism or something like that. You know, it can exist separately. And I think that's, it's for me, why I've been so happy to see Rascal. I think there's more than enough enthusiast media of, here's a thing that I think is really exciting that you should look at. This is cool. And I think there should be a bit more of a focus, and we're seeing a good bit of that, of this thing is cool, and in the same hand, hey, this thing sucks. You know, this practice, not like this guy, like, you're not writing hit pieces, you're not like, though that would be very funny.
Listen, we only write hit pieces when someone deserves it, you know? And that's always called investigative reporting.
I investigated why this guy I beefed with on Blue Sky sucks. Now
sometimes,
on Rascal.
Sometimes so it does happen.
That would be so fun. I'm just thinking of all of the times I've shit talked somebody in like a Discord where it's just like, look at this guy. And then just like, yeah, I'd put it on Rascal. What's up? That guy sucks. That'd be.
Listen, yes.
Don't let me do things. Never, don't let me do that. No one let me do
it's
that.
Always with cause, though, because sometimes when someone's shitty on the internet, it turns out they're also shitty in person.
So all of the brouhaha around Charlie's Polygon article, I think was positive because it was fantastic to see. Nothing brings a community together like saying fuck that guy. And whether or not it's deserved, editor's note, I don't think it was all that deserved. Some of it was. It was really great to see the turnout of people working to amplify each other and boost each other and talk about each other and saying like, okay, well, here, how about this? And I think it's that's what I was saying. It's a very difficult balance for a professional writing. You know, I think it can be very difficult to write something that's more complicated than just, I like this thing. It's cool. Did you see this AP? It's so gay. It was cool.
It's real hard. It's genuinely really difficult to strike that balance. Like, I respect and admire Charlie Hall so much. Like, him bringing me on to Polygon for that contract was evidence that he believes and cares so much about indie games that he was like, who in the space is talking about them in a way that will get clicks and prove and justify to Polygon that this type of coverage matters? And he was like, Rowan, she's going to be able to do it. And so I did, which was really cool. It really, the evidence and the turnout of those pieces really made it aware. The institutions that exist as journalism, it goes back to the same conversation before, getting co-opted by venture capitalist firms, by investors, by the ad revenue model, by the affiliate link model, of being like, we have to justify this coverage by how much money it will make us or how much attention it will bring to the site. And when it's just Charlie, it's just one guy, that's insane. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. And then when he brought me on, I wrote 10 articles a week for 19-hour weeks. Like, I was writing an article every less than 2 hours, which is insane and doesn't really produce good journalism, especially not in a sustainable way. But finding that balance of, like, what is quote-unquote newsworthy, what do I want to bring attention to, and what is going to keep this site alive, is a model that Rascal decided we did not want to fuck with at all. Because it's not good. It's not sustainable in a way that is healthy for both the ecosystem and the writers. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a hard balance to strike, and it's a huge responsibility. I stay up so many nights being worried that I am doing the right thing by the people in this community, by making sure that I am uplifting and providing equity to people who have been largely overlooked in the space. I also, like, am trying to stay true to my own interests and write about things that I like. Like, writing about things that I enjoy feels good, but especially right now in the world that it is, feels so self-serving in a way that I cannot justify most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, part of it, writing, is like, oh, we have to do that sometimes to keep ourselves from burning out and wanting to keep doing this work. But also, like, am I going to spend a whole workday talking about this game that I think is really cool by someone who already has a lot of success and notoriety? Or am I going to write about a game that I think is maybe not as great, but by someone who deserves that kind of moment in the spotlight? Or do I spend the time writing about the ways that climate change is impacting people who make games? And it's like, finding that balance and finding that division is hard. And, like, right now, Rascals each make about $1,200 a month. We do not make anywhere near a living wage, which is what we're trying to rectify a little bit with our pledge drive and continuing to grow. But the only reason I'm able to do this is because of the immense privilege and safety nets that I have. And so with those privilege and with that privilege and with those safety nets, I feel a responsibility to give back to a community that has largely been overlooked. Mm. And it's a tightrope that I am constantly walking. And on multiple occasions, I fall off into the chasm. And then the next day have to, like, respawn back at the beginning of the tightrope.
You just have to try again.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to keep trying. Because otherwise, it's just not going to exist. And I think that would be a terrible shame.
Mm. Yeah, I wish half of the people that got mad about that Polygon article put their money where their mouth was and supported Rascal. It was a thing I was very frustrated to see, even with my individual frustrations about it. Knowing just enough about the ways that publishing works now, especially for, like, that, you know, that sort of website, it was very frustrating watching people assign blame to an individual person when it's like, no, who you're mad about is, like, some guy in a suit that doesn't come into that building, you know?
You're mad at the guy who's sitting all the way at the top making a 6-7 figure salary,
right?
And not the guy sitting in the middle who makes a much lower paycheck and just gives a shit so much. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares so deeply but is constrained so much.
Right. And I think a lot about, like, my history with video game journalism and watching that mm-hmm. industry for a very long time. Like, I very specifically remember when Ziff Davis shut down 1UP. Like, I still very explicitly remember that day. I remember when they shut down Giant Bomb for the first time. I remember when they shut down Giant Bomb for the second time. I remember when they shut down Waypoint.
We love the folks at Remap.
For real. I think people in the tabletop space haven't had that history as much. of understanding the forces at play behind those websites existing.
Yeah, tabletop games are like at least a decade behind video games right now in terms of the way they're blowing up into the mainstream media, the way that they are getting money into the industry, and the way that journalism is covering them. Even with the way that journalism is covering tabletop games, we're like 20 years behind.
Yeah, it's every new PMG video feels like a watershed moment where it's just like, where people are like, oh my God, you can talk about tabletop games like this? And it's like, okay, yeah. No, that's fine. No, I'm glad you're excited for this one. No, that's good.
People Make Games is a huge influence on the way that I think about covering games. Like I don't think the January 6th war game piece would exist without Quinn's reporting on both the wargaming industry and the way he covered that large LARP, the Mad Max LARP. Quinn's has now become a bit of a colleague. We've spoken a couple times now, and like getting to become peers with people whose work I so deeply respect has been incredibly rewarding. And once you also learn that people are people, you're like, ah, right, cool. Like, everyone is a human being. Everyone is struggling. Everyone is trying to figure out how to do this. And especially, like, in tabletop journalism, it is unpaved. We're just like, all right, we're going off into the wilderness and figuring out how to do this. Like, I saw someone, to keep bringing up the January 6th piece, I saw someone comment and repost it and be like, Rascal is doing games journalism like it's never been done before. And I was like, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
a little bit.
Right, to the extent that, like, so few people are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to feel that way for a lot of people, which was what I meant by my PMG comment. It wasn't to deride them at all, in case anybody thought that. But it was like, there are people that have been doing the work and have been putting out these pieces. But like you said, it's only in the last handful of years that it's been to a broad enough audience that, an article like the January 6th War Game or Quinn's Mad Max video would even be able to reach that amount of people. Like, even exist, let alone have that reach.
Exactly. Yeah.
All on the backs of queer people being little guys.
All on the backs of queer people being little guys. Listen, the entire industry really owes so much to little guys.
God.
We salute you, little guys.
We salute you, little guys. Somewhere Dylan is getting too strong, and we have to stop.
No, actually, I prefer that they keep getting stronger.
They're already Super Dylan. What's next? What are we going to do?
Mega Dylan.
No! No! We can't let it happen. No, I'm joking. Please happen. Please let it happen. I wrote down like such responsible questions.
Yeah, go for it. Like, ask me some responsible questions. Why not? Go for it.
You're so supportive. You're
what
so
can I
supportive.
Say? I'm here for it.
Well, so I was talking with my partner and I was like the difficulty that I'm having in order, listen, I'll be a little vulnerable on the podcast.
All right. We're getting emotional, guys.
Yeah. Here, I got to move it. Okay. So, I was talking with my partner and I was like, the difficulty that I'm experiencing is like talking with other people. It's about like a specific work, a specific thing, a specific, I'm not like, hey, tell me about all of the tabletop games you've ever written. Like, let's talk about this tabletop game. And for this, it's just like, okay, tell me about Rascal, this website that you've been writing for constantly for the last year with a number of other individuals, while also the entire country burns down around us in a way that is so explicitly different for other people. And so it feels very silly to be like, so what's your favorite Dungeons and Dragons class? It's Warlock. Everybody's is Warlock, and if it's not
your favorite, well, that makes sense. Yeah. I am an edgelord, so I love rogues.
That's fair. I'll accept it. It's the non-magic Warlock. I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's just like, what do I even ask? What is like just write, you good? You good? How you? No. Yeah, right. No. So, not going to ask that. I know the answer to that. I could just write that down. So actual play. Let's just pick a thing and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, why not?
I reread your article, your interview with Orion last night. And was just reminded that Orion was one of the best to do it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Y'all, the non-targeted y'all fucked up. God, Orion was on one.
Orion changed the game quite literally. Like, actual play would not exist as it is today without Orion.
Orion has a, there's a quote in that article that I feel like is exactly what I think of when I think of Orion. There's like, people will forget who I am. People will ascribe my work to other people. And that's just what it is. And I'm just like,
yep. I got it.
Like, I was aware of Orion, like, before they worked at Dimension 20. And it's like, that's just how they are. Like, sadly, they've always had that mindset, but they've always been right about it in the way that, like, you know. And it sucks.
Yeah, being a black non-binary person in this space is incredibly thankless, and it sucks. And I try to do my work to, like, uplift what I can, but it's again, a microcosm of the way the world at large is. Like, black trans people get the brunt of all of the worst intersections.
Especially at a time, they were doing it at a time when, I don't want to say the industry, the hobby, wasn't interested in it, because there were people that were interested in it, but it was not the same.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think about how many times I've seen Carlos, who works there now, talk about his work, and people talk about Carlos and all of this, and just like, it's a very different circumstance. It's such a different vibe than it was then. That wasn't for anything. I just want to give Orion flowers at every opportunity I can.
And you should, because they deserve it.
Yeah, they absolutely do. Plot Armor is one of the best games ever made. Mutants in the Dark is incredible. People don't talk about it enough in Forged in the Dark games. As I said, y'all fucking up. So, actual play.
Mm-hmm.
I have, and I don't want to talk about my feelings about actual play. Let's talk about your feelings with actual play, and then at some point I'm sure I'll interject.
Hmm.
What do you think? Great, terrible starter icebreaker question. What do you think makes a good actual play?
Intention.
Explain.
No.
Damn. Got me.
I think like any work of art, going into the piece that you're making with an idea of what it is you want to address and what it is you want to be doing, even if that is, oh, I want to sit with a couple of friends at a table and tell jokes, you know what your thing is. Don't, and if you go, oh, I want to become famous for sitting around a table and telling jokes to my friends, that's the disconnect. That's a problem, because what you are doing and what your intention and what your outcome is, completely separate. If you sit down and go, I just want to enjoy myself and have a document of this game, whole different ball game. But when it comes to like a good actual play, like the things that I cover, it is choosing the game with an intention of what kind of story you want to tell, what kind of themes you want to tackle, intentionally choosing whether you want to do a pre-recorded or a live stream or a heavily edited or a largely like crossover table talk kind of thing, or like Jeff Stormer's Party of One is a great example of a good actual play, because it exists, there's nothing else that's like it, but Jeff knows exactly what it is he's doing. Goodia by Nameless Domain is another great example of like, they knew exactly what they were doing going into making that. Dimension 20 is so good because they're like, oh, we are improv comedians who want to sit around with other improv comedians and kind of like create a narrative around it. But the intention that they have is so clear. And again, thanks to Orion's work, is like, oh, we are going to really up production quality of this, and we're going to make a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you don't need all of that production value. Like, My First Dungeon is a great example. Queen's Court Games is a great example. The Panic Table is a great example of, we have a story we want to tell, we know how we want to present it to people, and we stay consistent with that presentation. And it's difficult in like an emergent narrative form where you start to develop different ideas, but that's the same with any piece of art that you're creating. You set out with one idea, and then you find what it is you actually want to be doing as you're making the thing. It just so happens that in actual play, you're doing that in front of an audience. You're doing that, and like, that is kind of the reason you're doing it in actual play as opposed to another medium. And that's also another level of intention of like, why are you choosing to tell this story through actual play versus graphic novel or prose or web series or whatever?
Mm.
And that's what I mean when I say intention is what makes a good actual play, because what is good art is not something that I feel capable of being the arbiter of, because it's such a subjective thing.
I'm glad I get to bring this up. I made myself laugh earlier today of thinking of starting the interview and just be like, Rowan, are games art?
No.
And just like, just, damn. No, you heard it here first. being a weird little shit about it was funny only to me, and I was like, I can't do that. But no, you gave me the space to do it. Thank you.
Always. I'm here holding space for the lyrics of Defying Gravity.
You missed me with that one. I got...
Oh, that's like a two-month-old reference about the Wicked press circuit, where these poor women are just like out of their minds after the end of a press junket day, and an interviewer sits down and goes, yeah, people are really responding to the lyrics of Defying Gravity. They're really holding space for the lyrics. And then the performers are like, what does that even... What is that? What are you talking about?
I know all of the words that you said, but the order you put them in is not...
Am I having a stroke right now?
Oh my god, I didn't know about that. That's okay. That's incredible.
Sometimes you just gotta look at pop culture and go, ah, there's some beautiful, stupid shit out there.
Actual play. This is a very fun interview, because my train of thought just derails every time we have a question.
I'm so sorry. That's just my vibe.
No, that's what happens. This is not me complaining. This is fantastic. The only reason I try to get it back on track is, like I said, the semblance of professional. Just ask your responsible questions. Just to slightly look like I know what I'm doing. Now you're making fun of me. Now this is getting mean. Now you're being a mean girl about it, and I don't appreciate it.
Now we're antagonistic. Listen, that's going to be the new dynamic for the rest of this interview.
This is interview to enemies. You've heard of enemies to lovers. This is the opposite. We will actively be rivals by the end of this
podcast. Yeah, we're nemeses now, actually.
Yeah, this is what, yeah. We have a blood feud.
Generations from now, our descendants will not know why we hate each other. And they'll be like, listen, it's the Hatfields and the McCoys. It's the largest, it's the blood feud of all time.
No, you said system matters. I could never hate you that deeply.
Nah, fuck the discourse. Shit, I gotta go.
No, it's so, no. A thing you mentioned that I think is important to focus on. Is you talked about consistency of presentation. I think a lot of people get, I don't want to say bent out of shape, but I'm going to say bent out of shape about the presentation for actual plays. I think a lot of people feel a sort of way about, you know, things like Critical Role and Dimension 20, and then look at the rest of the landscape and say, like, why don't you look like this? Which, first of all, you should watch Transplanter and shut the fuck up. But my main point is, where do you see the actual play space going? Because it's creating a Dimension 20 Critical Role. I mean, even Transplanter, but, you know, this sort of mostly professional, heavily edited, you know, a product isn't sustainable, especially now.
So I think actual play at its roots is a folk art. Tabletop games are a folk art that are meant for consumption of people with very little resources. And that's where actual play began. It developed as like a live show because of like the Acquisitions Incorporated shows. Now we're at this place where we're finding a schism, as we often do in every historical art form. We see the people who are doing like really interesting, thought-provoking art being the people with not too much money and resources, and the people doing the big spectacles that are like interesting and cool to watch, and sometimes have some things to say, but largely are just following a model of what has come before it. So We're seeing money start to make its way into it through Critical Role, through Dimension 20. You have, like, Encounter Party, which is another good example of, like, studios backing actual plays. And with the way the economy is going, I don't know if that's going to continue. Yeah, I don't know if it's sustainable. But I do think we are reaching a point where the burnout churn rate of production is getting a little bit lower because people are realizing that they're not maybe not going to make money off of doing this, and they have to do it for themselves and, like, for the love of making art. I think Tales Yet Told, the Voices in the Wood, is an absolutely incredible example of, like, oh, this is where actual play could go. Like, we are taking these games and telling really powerful stories and really interesting stories and making them with a production value that's very good. Kendo's just really, really good at producing podcasts. We're reaching this middle ground of where there's, like, a schism. And I think the important part is that neither one is more important than the other to exist. Like, they just fulfill different elements of the ecosystem. Like, the big name shows breach into a mainstream audience and bring the fact that, like, oh, this medium exists to a lot more people. And the smaller shows maybe reach 100 people, but those 100 people are really, really impacted. And so, same with that idea of intent, it's like, what you have to know what you want out of this in making this. Like, are you here to make art? Are you here to make money? Are you here to make celebrity? And, like, those things aren't all mutually exclusive, necessarily, but that's how you don't burn out as you continue doing it, is you know what you want to get out of it. And if what you want to get out of it is the satisfaction of making art, it's a lot more sustainable. And so I think that's where it's headed. I think, like, there are still indie films, student films, and then blockbusters. Like, those two things exist simultaneously in the world. And I think that's what we're looking at with actual play, because it's a lot cheaper to make an actual play at scale for a big production studio. You can then make other content out of it. Like, we're seeing the Dimension 20 Webtoons comic. We see all the Critical Role comics, the Critical Role animated shows. Like, studios are going to see this as an opportunity to have a writer's room make money and then use the writer's room to then make a secondary piece of content. Which is just capitalism. That's just unfortunately how it works. But I don't think that minimizes the original art form in any way, because people are still going to make cool shit. Sure, so where is actual play headed? Who the fuck knows? The world's burning. I don't know.
Where is it headed?
Yeah, exactly.
8 directions simultaneously.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, and maybe fortunately.
Yeah. I think it's ultimately good. My own specific opinions aside.
You're like, I think it's good, except for what I think.
Right, I think it's good, except for the ones I don't like. Everyone listen to Friends of the Table, that's what I'll say.
Oh, God, yeah, Friends of the Table. Again, people of color who deserve so much credit for really pushing the medium forward and getting none of the credit for it. Like, we would not have the Adventure Zone without Friends of the Table.
People forget that.
Yeah.
I'm a hater in a very specific way.
People deserve credit for the shit that they make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately it's good. I mean, listen, again, we wouldn't be where we are without queer people pretending to be little guys. And I think so much of actual play is just, here's a new way for you to pretend to be a little guy.
Yeah.
And it's the... I didn't ask this question with any intent. I'm just saying words. It's funny to watch people talk about the things that they enjoy and the things that they dislike and the things that they find unapproachable about actual play. Because as long as I've been engaging with actual play and keeping up with it and trying to, you know, watch and engage with it as much as I can, there's been people who are like, well, I only watch video. Well, I only listen to audio. Well, I only listen to episodes that are less than 2 hours. Like, well, I only listen if it's more than 3 hours and all of this other thing. And what I think is tricky for me about it. And I wonder your thoughts on this. It feels as though when someone says something like that to me, right? Like, I only watch video podcasts. Mm-hmm. It feels to me like it feels the same as when people say, well, audiobooks aren't books. Where it's just like, well, you're inherently cutting yourself off from experiences just writ large. And then you're cutting yourself off from examples of people that are doing very strong things with that medium. Because there's audio and video have their own strengths specifically. And there's things you can do with audio that you can't do with video, and vice versa. And so when you say, like, I only watch live recordings, it's like, okay, you're just not interested at all in what people are doing, you know. Mm-hmm. It feels so weird.
Well, I think I'm gonna push back just a slight bit.
You're on the podcast doesn't mean you have to agree with me.
Oh no, listen, I'm a sycophant. I actually only agree with whatever the other person says around me. but I think the important distinction there is someone going, I only watch or listen to X, mm-hmm. versus I think only this type of thing is good and everything else is bad. I think that's an important distinction to think about, because everyone has preferences of how they consume media. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, it's very difficult for me to watch a live-streamed actual play because I just don't have the time. I don't really have the patience in a lot of ways to kind of watch it be unedited. And not to say that I don't think there are good live-streamed actual plays, because there certainly are. It's just not my preference or my taste. And I think that live-streamed actual plays have a lot of strengths, like developing community, having that almost theatrical type of experience, having that parasocial development, completely neutrally, by the way, parasocial, of being
it's
like,
just
oh,
a word. It's just a
word. Exactly. But watching this person tell this story and make those choices in real time is part of the appeal of watching an unedited actual play. And so I think there is a lot of problems over elitism of being like, this form of the medium is better than this form. And I think that there are a lot of ways that people can be surprised by things that they think they wouldn't like just because of preconceived notions or biases around different forms. But I don't think it's a problem for someone to say, I only listen to X because that's my preference. And I think that's something a lot of people have to figure out and navigate, because that's a lot of the discourse around actual play online is like, you have to do edited actual plays, otherwise no one's going to watch them, or you have to do live-streamed actual plays, otherwise it's not actually actual play. And like, guys, the world's burning. Like, let's stop being about this. Like, fuck it, let people make the stuff they want to make. It can all be good in different ways. Who cares?
Right. You're right, obviously. I feel like
Not always, to be clear.
The statement just said, correct. I think part of what I see happening with discourse online is people saying their opinion and either implicitly or explicitly meaning that that is better. Do you know what I mean? So you're right. If someone was just like, I prefer unedited podcasts, it's like, yeah, that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But someone saying, I only watch such and such and such, 9 times out of 10, I feel like it's either taken as or meant as this is the superior form. Which,
and you know what though? Who gives a fuck? People can say things online. A super can just say shit online.
This is what I'm learning from my friend Jordan of his thing in 2025. For a white guy, he's a great guy. his thing in 2025 has been to like approach people with kindness and to just try to be kinder. And that's exactly his answer. We're like me, who's been online like forever and is just way too fucking keyed up to have any sort of discourse and is just always ready for the retweets. And he's just like, who gives a shit, dude? And I'm like, whoa, what? And he's like, buddy. And I'm like, you're right. Listen, you're right. You're right. Obviously, you're right. We all know, right?
Only like pancakes, but
how fucking dare you? What about waffles?
No, exactly. Exactly. For real, though, I do prefer waffles over pancakes, but
I do think waffles are better.
I agree. But you know what? If someone disagrees with me, I don't give a fuck. Doesn't really matter. My value as a person and their value as a person is not impacted by our breakfast preferences. Roll for breakfast, everyone.
There it is. There it is. God, I swear, if someone makes roll for breakfast, it'll be the best day of my life. I'll be so pleased. Spinning off of that slightly, because I'm enjoying this topic. Spinning off of this slightly, I don't want to say, do you think they're required to? That's not how I want to approach this. But like, so an unedited podcast, right? An unedited live stream. Do you think, again, this is a weird question to phrase. I'm probably just gonna have to say it three times so you kind of get what I'm saying. Do you think they need to provide an edited version? Do you think there's value in them having an edited version?
I think like, it is more accessible.
Not need. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more accessible for a lot of people to have edited versions. I think I tend to find personally that the quality is a little bit higher when things are edited because there are intentional choices being made to what to highlight, what to leave in, what to cut out. But do they need to? No.
Yeah, I was like, need isn't the word that I want, but we'll get through a sentence so I can.
Yeah, I think it's a better marketing strategy, maybe. I think in a world where attention spans have been minimized and people have come to expect a certain standard of production quality, I think it has a better chance of reaching more people if that's what you're looking for. But that also goes to say, like, if you are an incredible live performer and you are with a group of incredible live performers and you can hold it down, maybe you strike lightning in a bottle. Like, it's totally possible. I just think that you are giving yourself less of a chance to do so. And then there are other methods of, like, taking clips from your live stream and putting those on YouTube Shorts or TikTok for the amount that it's all still alive. Like,
TikTok
whatever.
For as long as you can.
Exactly. Like, would it be beneficial to getting it out there? Maybe. But if that's what you want, like, again, it goes back to that intention.
Yeah. It's that thing of, like, is there value in providing different formats? Is there interest? Is there... Because, and this is assuming, or I guess approaching the concept that doesn't cost someone's time, money, labor, you know, assuming all things are free in a vacuum. Right. Is it worth it in the sense that you have to pay someone to do it? Is it worth it in the sense that, like, you might be five people barely scraping by to produce it as it is? And so I wonder if, like, in the space of actual play, will we see more shows, you know, doing both formats? Like, I think for a while, I don't know if they still do it, Dimension 20 did audio only versions, and it's like, that's interesting. That's an interesting, you know, bridge to gap. And they certainly have the resources for it. But like, is that a thing everyone should do? Is that a thing everyone should think about? I don't know.
It all comes down to diversification.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know, if you have the capability of like stripping the audio out and just putting it up on a podcaster. Yeah. Why not? But again, like you were saying before, Matt, audio and video have different strengths and it's not going to translate perfectly well for someone to take a born video show that maybe uses visual effects to enhance it, or maybe uses like performers' faces in a way, or like performer positioning, might not translate to podcasting. Might it be useful to try and get some reach? Like, maybe you'll reach some people you didn't before. But yeah, like you were saying, again, it's all about that cost benefit analysis. If we're going to use the business terms of it all.
Sometimes I bring up cost benefit analysis and people get weird. I'm just like, listen, you have to think about what things cost and whether it's worth it to do it. Like, it's not my fault analysts are, you know, ding dongs. Like, it's still a valid strategy.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can decide what the cost is and what the benefit are, and you can weigh those things in an analysis, perhaps.
What if we just did this for 3 hours? No, you can't. You have a thing.
I mean, hey, I got like another hour in me, probably.
This is the feeling that I have in the middle of like every interview, where it's just like, what if this was the rest of my life? This seems great.
Can we just vibe and talk? Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, that's why I made it my whole life, to talk to people, honestly.
When you wrote that article about Grandpa's Farm, I was so excited. Like, as an individual, I was just like, thank God. You know, I honestly feel like so much of what, like, you were doing at Polygon and then Rascal kind of overall is just like, thank God someone's talking about these games from my itch library. Because, you know.
They deserve it. Like,
they deserve it. They've been in there so long.
And you're like, oh, that's okay. Now I'll play it. Sure.
That is my going thing with Itch. Is my favorite thing about Itch is someone will be like, this is a really cool tabletop game. And I'll go, oh, cool. Let me check it out. I bought it 3 years ago. Okay, cool. Let's rock.
Oh, this was in a bundle? Fuck. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
The number of times it was a running joke. I think they redesigned the whole website. It was a running joke for a while was how many bundles you had from a specific game. Like, how big could that bar be? And I think it was Fist was like 8.
Incredible.
And it's just like, damn, clearly the best game.
You're like, I got it 8 times.
Listen, there's no way I would be a fool and buy the same game 8 times. Clearly it's just that's good.
No, I just keep hitting it over and over again. I go
I don't think I bought it. Let me just so I always do this end question. I don't know if we're ending, but we'll do it now. Just for the sake of argument. I always end with a three question. The first episode, I came up with like a, ooh, this would be a funny, like, you know, what are your three favorite whatever? And I've kept up with it, and it's very funny. And I don't think about it beforehand. I think about it as we're doing the interview. And so I think in honor of this whole interview, I have to ask, Rowan, what are your three favorite politics?
My three favorite politics?
Yeah. What are your three favorite politics?
Anarchism.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Democratic socialism.
That's, you know, when it works.
When it works. Yeah.
When it works, exactly. It works well. I wouldn't mind it.
And non-authoritarian communism.
Tricky to thread.
Yeah, a really difficult needle to thread there. Yeah, that's been something I've been really reckoning with the last couple of years, has being like, yeah, when I got into college, I was like a red-blooded Marxist. Blah, 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 blah. Did I fucking know what Marxism was? No, obviously not. I was just hearing the cool words that people said.
Much like a conservative, then, you didn't know what Marxism meant.
Exactly. And when you that was a good joke. I did not appreciate that joke as much as I should have in that moment. Great job.
Thank you.
As a former stand-up comedian, got to appreciate a good joke that takes a little bit to roll there.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I just, and as you learn more about the history of like dialectic politics and how things kind of evolve and where things have tried to be instated and then have failed, like learning about like communist China and Vietnam and the ways that it's failed and the ways that it's succeeded and realizing like, oh, actually authoritarianism by any brand is bad. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like fascism or communism, like, anyone who decides to take sole control of a people's through any means is actually bad. Mm. And I don't know if we've really figured anything out yet. I really love anarchism in a lot of ways because I think, whereas a lot of people think of it as libertarianism, where it's like, no, I'm just going to defend me and my own. Anarchism is much more along the lines of like, no, I'm going to take care of the people around me because no one else is going to do it for us. Mm-hmm. Like, taking agency over your own politics, over your own community, is what anarchism is really about. And it's not just about, like, the survival of the strongest. So those are my three favorite politics, yeah.
I had that thought. I was like, I'm gonna ask what three favorite politics. I don't know where that question's gonna go. You could have said three joking answers. I would have accepted it. You just gotta.
You think I'm gonna give you comedy about politics? Never.
How dare you? I'm so serious about politics. That's a weird question that just popped into my head, but I'm gonna ask it.
Go for it.
What is the most political actual play?
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know if I have an answer.
I don't know if I have an answer either, because there's a lot of them in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. We really would have to start with defining what we mean by political.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, considering it just popped in my brain, I don't know.
Because Transplanar is obviously explicitly political in a lot of ways. The very existence of a show led by queer trans people of color is a political act by itself. And like being an anti-colonial, anti-orientalist specific show makes it political. Then you also have like Dimension 20 Mentopolis, which is about like labor rights and like realizing, like I had an interview with Brennan that I did back for Polygon, like way before I was ever writing full time, was about how Mentopolis is the act of realizing that you're a frog in a boiling pot. And like, when do you jump? Like, what do you do? And what is the resistance that comes from taking that action? So that's inherently very political. I think Critical Role is very explicitly not political. I think it's very apolitical, which is something that I actually have a lot of problems with. I think, like, we all saw it about Marquette being based on Palestine and, like, that whole issue arising.
Which I think is a fun thing to say in a room that doesn't have any non-white people.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think if in like we were talking about earlier with you know, criticizing Polygon, like the criticism that you have to first recognize that like they said that in a room and there was probably not a single brown person in the room. Mm-hmm. And that's how that got to there.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, that's super cool thing to say as a white person.
And you're like, hey, bud, maybe think about that for a second. maybe just think about it a little bit. And it's important to hold people with power to account. It's also important to not fight our allies rather than our enemies. I think that's also very important to think about, like holding people in power to account of being like, hey, what you did is fucked up, versus I am going to destroy you and everything you love because this is the only place that I have power to actionize that. I'm going to say it again. Actionize. We're here.
There it is. Twice. That's it.
Now it's a word.
Everyone's going to be saying it.
And listen, I'm making it happen. But I think that's really, really important. And something that I like think about in my politics a lot is going, am I trying to prove that I am a good person by holding these people to power to account? Or am I trying to make the world better? And that line is very flimsy in a lot of ways. But like, there's a really great example of when the big backlash happened about Critical Role using Marquette as Palestine without that acknowledgement, and then them donating $50,000 to the World Kitchen. Like, that's a moment in which, okay, cool, we held them to account, they did the thing, that's good. Figuring out where and when to exercise our energy is going to be really important in these 4 years, I think, and even past that, because I think about Fred Hampton a lot. Fred Hampton was the Black Panther leader from Chicago who was like 21 and was uniting all of the gangs of Chicago who had a lot of beef against each other, but doing it to solidify working class power
against like police brutality and against the oppressive state. And he was really successful at that and united enemy factions that were fighting for regular reasons that factions and cities fight about, to be like, hey, actually, we need to stop fighting each other, because otherwise this bigger threat is going to kill all of us. And then just him saying that and being successful about it got him killed by that bigger power, because it was working. And that's something that I think we all, as a collective, as an industry, as a community, need to recognize, and is important for us to know, is like, we need to not make it easy for fascists to come and kill all of us, because that is the end goal. And the only way we can do that is by being in solidarity with each other in real, true ways, and acknowledging that not everyone is perfect. People are going to fuck up. People are going to hurt other people. And holding space for that compassion, holding space for restitution, holding space for people who are willing to acknowledge that they fucked up and being willing to grow, and not misdirecting anger out of catharsis. One of the things that I live by is that knowing who to be angry at is praxis. And it's something I try to find myself a lot. And like, preaching to your friends about someone who did something really problematic and shitty is really good and important, because that's what like friendship and community is built on. But bringing that into a public forum without any actionable steps towards restoration is just putting us as crabs in a bucket a little bit.
Yeah, I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine about that, where a friend of mine had been very vocally critical of something, to try to not get too in the weeds.
I don't think it matters about exactly what it was.
Yeah. It was resolved. The issue was resolved. It was identified, and repaired, I think, as best as it could be. My friend made a post, kind of acknowledging that it happened, and like, well, but whatever, they still did it. And I was like, I spoke to another friend, and I was like, what are we doing? Like, if we're so quick to attack something and not offer the same energy when the concern is acknowledged and restored, or resolved, I guess it's restored is maybe not the right word, but resolved, is it like, we have acknowledged the problem, we accept the problem, we have, you know, resolve the problem. And it's like, if we don't have at least the same energy for acknowledging and accepting that it's like, you got it, thank you, then it's like, what are we doing? You know, it feels like at the end, all we're going to do, like, I don't believe this, like I was a liberal until a trans person was mean to me. Like, I don't, those people aren't real. When I say they aren't real, I mean, I believe they are real people. I don't believe they were ever a liberal for one second.
Yeah.
And so like those people don't exist, but if there are people who are just trying to get by in the same way all of us are, and we're, like you said, holding space for that compassion, that like, yeah, you did fuck up, and we got through it, great. And then just not holding that same energy when we come out the other side, I'm just not sure what we're doing.
Yeah, and the important part is also not to like ignore the fact that happened. It's not to like pretend and like that person is then not entitled to the same level of notoriety or success or financial gain or whatever. Like, they're not entitled to maintaining their position of power when they fuck up afterwards. But they are entitled to maintaining their position of personhood and their position of having community and having people being willing to help them navigate and grow from that experience. I think it's a very puritanical, carceral mindset to go, this person has fucked up once or even a couple of times, and now they have become depersoned. They deserve to be cut off from every single person in their life, because then the only people that they're going to go back to are to be people who are like, yeah, fuck those liberals, right? And it's not an easy thing to do. And again, like I said before, it's about people in positions of privilege to take those steps, mm-hmm. to be the ones to be like, hey, we are going to work together to figure this all out. Because, like, I can't blame a lot of people who are like, I don't trust you anymore because you did this, even if you say you're sorry, even if you do the work. I personally don't trust you and don't want to have a relationship with you. Can't blame anyone for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that we're going to have to work towards if we are going to be building coalitions to fight fascism.
I thought of a better three question. I'm still going to include the politics question because you gave a serious answer and it was great and I respect you.
Now you want a silly one?
Now I want a silly one. Rowan, who are your three favorite little guys?
Oh, my three favorite little guys.
That it can be that like that you've been like if you want to be like who are your favorite little guys that you've played? Because I know I've got them. So, but I don't know if you've got them up like that. You know what I mean? I don't know if you're ready like that. I don't want to put you on the spot.
That's hard. Who are my favorite little guys? I really like Puppy Cat from Bee and Puppy Cat.
Great a good little guy. God, what a good little guy.
For a Halloween party last year, Viditya Valetti did a PowerPoint presentation about drawing goblins that ended up turning into an interactive game where the little goblin broke into the wizard's magical fantastic castle and found a gun, and sure. That goblin lives in my brain rent free.
The goblin in a wizard's castle discovering a gun.
You find a gun, and you know, sometimes you find a gun. And I think
my favorite third... Lifetime original movie, Sometimes You Find a Gun.
Coming back home for Christmas to your small town where you're going to fall in love and find a gun. And I think my third favorite little guy is Hypnotoad from Futurama.
Great option, honestly.
Yeah.
Great curveball.
I know. Listen, rule of threes, you gotta throw a weird one in there.
You gotta have an unexpected one that makes everyone go, You weren't bullshitting with this one. You gave this one a thought.
Yeah.
I realized I thought of a good one because I was talking about it very recently with my partner. Petrie from Land Before Time.
Oh yeah, good one. Ooh,
what a little guy.
Yeah. Ooh, a real good one.
You're being too positive. It's making me. A lifetime of being bullied in school makes me uncertain. Like I think Rowan is bullshitting.
I am not at all. I love Land Before Time.
No, I'm untrustworthy.
Littlefoot? I fuck with Littlefoot heavy.
It's the funniest thing that's been said on this podcast. I fuck with Littlefoot heavy. Incredible. I love you. I think we should end this.
Yeah, probably. That makes sense.
I think we're good. I think we've reached our nemesis arc.
Yeah, no, we hate each other now.
Yeah, because I'm a Petrie head. You're a Littlefoot stan. Clearly, the lines have been drawn. We found it.
And the twain never shall meet.
Right. That's it. That's nobody likes Sarah. You can get right the fuck out.
Oh, poor Sarah.
I'm just showing off that I remember the names.
What about Ducky?
Ducky might be the bridge that brings us together.
There it is. And see, that's coalition building.
that's what you need to do. Every time you disagree with someone online, ask them how they feel about Ducky from Land Before Time.
Yeah, everyone listening to this podcast, I think your life will be infinitely better if you never argue with someone online again.
Oh my God. Rowan, I need you to know that one of my favorite people in my life tells me constantly to stop fighting with people online. And I know emotionally that they're correct.
Just gotta get it up here.
I gotta get it I'm just,
you know what you should do
online.
You should, if you, every time you see it, you should go in your notes app and you should type out your response in your notes app instead.
That sounds healthier.
It does. It sounds healthier, but also less cathartic.
That, yeah. I listen, some of us have been online since being online was a thing. Okay. Some of us never logged off. Some of us, they invented the term online to describe the behaviors we'd already been existing.
And you're even terminally online, maybe.
I've been, listen, I will be online until there is no more online.
Which, hey, we've got like 5 years.
We're working towards it. Yeah, yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there.
And then you'll be free.
God.
And instead, you'll be going to the town board and you'll see someone writing and then you'll post a secondary post being like, fuck your bullshit, I hate this.
Look, Thomas wrote that article about D&D zines. Mm-hmm. And all I took away from that was that people were still online before there was an online.
Yeah.
They just didn't have the word to describe it. Motherfuckers have always been online.
Speaking of which, if you've made it this far in the podcast, you should subscribe to Rascal News for our pledge drive so we can keep writing articles like that.
Absolutely. No, I was gonna bring it up. I did a terrible thing. At the intro, at the beginning, I usually go like, hey, talk about who you are and why you're here and all of that. No, breeze right past it. Too casual.
You want to do it now? You can edit it in post.
No, let's do it now for the outro, which I normally do anyway. I'm gonna leave all this bit in because I'm always up for self-deprecation. I usually do it in the outro anyway, so the fact that it's not in the intro, listen, if you've listened to enough of these episodes, you know how this works. Rowan, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time.
This was great. I had a great time. Listen, we journeyed down so many trails, so many paths. We'll see if I get yelled at on the internet, and if I do, that's okay.
I'll be right there yelling at them. Listen, we brought it back around. Ducky brought us back together.
Yeah, okay? Come on.
Ducky has joined our houses forever. Rowan, please tell everybody who you are, what you do, where people can find you, how much money they should give you. At Rascal specifically, but also as an individual. Like, listen, you want to give Rowan money directly, go for it. I'm not going to tell you not to.
And you could. It'd be kind of weird, honestly. I feel like subscribing to Rascal might actually be a more sustainable option for me. But
yeah, it's the better thing. But like, listen, you got $20. You want to give it to Rowan? I'm not gonna stop you.
Listen, yeah, we have the same $20 going around the tabletop industry. It'll happen. I'm Rowan Zioli. I am a co-founder and writer for Rascal News, an independent, worker-owned, reader-supported tabletop news journalism outlet. We are currently running our pledge drive where we can try to do a bunch of cool stuff. You can pay us $5 a month to read all of our articles. If you want to give us more, you can give us more. Stay trashy.
Oh my god, I love that. What an incredible...
How we end all of our podcast recordings.
We are so close to the Cameron stretch goal. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're very close. Listen, yeah, if you give us enough money, we're going to have new columnists. We're going to have Cameron Kunzelman from Range Touch write a monthly column about whatever he wants to write about. We also are going to have a second columnist come on at that same time. We're also going to try and pay ourselves a little bit more of a living wage so we can keep doing this. Support independent journalism wherever you can, even if tabletop games aren't your thing. I don't know why the fuck you're listening to this if they're not. But like,
if you're a fan enough of this podcast, first of all, I'm shocked that you were like, I don't know anything about tabletop games, but let's listen to this podcast.
Like, I'm really into politics. Really into trans folks talking about politics.
Rowan, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a delight, Matt. It was great actually talking to you after us just like going back and forth on Blue Sky for months.
But no, that's gonna be the end. Thank you so much, and have a good one, everybody.
Bye.
All right.
right, another episode of What You Do in the Podcast in the can. I again want to thank Rowan so much for being such a good sport during this interview. They were so on board for any of my goofy questions or silly jokes. Honestly, just a fantastic time. The links to everything we talked about will be in the show notes. The links to Rascal's stuff, Rowan's stuff, everything will be there. I highly suggest, if you can, please look into joining the Rascal Pledge Drive. If nothing else, make a free account so you can read all of the articles. You know, support at whatever comfortable level you can. You know, supporting independent journalism during these times is so, so, so important. You can find all the links for me and the show in the show notes as well. All the socials, stuff like that. Thank you, everybody that's backing this on Patreon. It's just incredible support. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. Anytime anyone gives me any amount of money for anything that I've done, it always is so incredible. I have a bunch of episodes coming up for y'all very soon. You're gonna start getting a couple episodes a week. I have a lot of interviews to get through, so I'm going to cut this one short. I love you. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day.